it's time now to join Rob Hugh-Jones in London in the BBC. Good morning, Rob.
And good evening to you.
Thank you. Now, this Saturday is April the 1st, and according to a United Nations projection, April will see India overtake China as the world's most populous nation. Tell us more.
Well, it's remarkable, isn't it? We've grown up in our lives just assuming and just knowing, of course, that China is the most populous country in the world. But actually, according to the United Nations, this coming month of April, April starts on Saturday, this coming month of April, we'll see India overtake China and become the most populous country in the world. India's projected population for the middle of April will be 1,425,775,850, which is a very big number, and kind of interesting that they managed to sort of get it right down to the one individual, the 850th. But essentially, that's 1.5 billion people, and that is going to be more, they estimate, than China. I should just say China's economy is six times bigger than India. So this is not about economies. This is about demography and populations. And there was a news story in the last couple of days which really underlines this, which came from China's Ministry of Education. It said the number of kindergartens in China has dropped for the first time in 15 years. More than 5,000 kindergartens closed their doors in China last year because of a decline in the number of children. China's birth rate also dropped last year to its lowest level on record. People will remember, of course, that China had a one-child policy. It introduced that in 1980, and it ended that in 2016. And indeed, it removed all restrictions on family size in 2021, just 2 years ago. But birth rates have kept falling in China. In India, by comparison, the median age, if you lined up everyone, who would be the one in the middle? The median age is 28. They have a very young working population in India. So very different to China. I'll just give you the figures for China. They reckon that by 2050, China's median age will be 51. That's 12 years higher than it is now. So clearly, China is on an aging population trajectory, and India is not. And that'll be very interesting in the coming years to see India, well, in the coming month, to see India overtake. And then let's see how much further India will go. It'd be very interesting to see how that works out.
Exactly. Demographics, right? Now, regardless of its relative population size to that of India, China does remain a huge and powerful country, and it's exerting more and more influence around the world. That'll be illustrated further this week when the president of Taiwan visits Central America. What's the link there, Rob?
Yes, well, China really is flexing its diplomatic muscles around the world right now. You think Xi Jinping, the head of China, was in Moscow last week, wasn't he, with that peace plan for Ukraine, potential peace plan for Ukraine. The week before, China was touting its diplomacy in bringing together rivals in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Iran, which was a big deal. If you look in Africa, Kamala Harris, the U.S. vice president, is there today in Ghana, visiting Ghana, Tanzania, Zambia. And that is about countering Chinese influence and Russian influence in Africa. So, you know, China's influence around the world is always a big story. And this week, that is underlined by the president of Taiwan visiting Central America, visiting Belize and Guatemala. Why? Because those two countries in Central America are the last two in that region to have formal diplomatic ties with Taiwan. The rest of them have switched allegiances from Taiwan to China, interestingly enough. And of course, China regards Taiwan as a renegade province, and it sees a reunion with Taiwan as being something that will happen in the coming years. Very controversial, of course, because Taiwan sees itself as independent and sovereign. But it's just interesting that last week Honduras moved into the Chinese camp away from Taiwan. And if that happens formally, by the way, that will only leave 13 countries in the world that have formal diplomatic links with Taiwan. So you can see that in this way, China is again exercising influence all around the world, and this week, Central America.
Yes, goodness, quite a change. Now, another visit that we're expecting to see this coming week is Britain's King Charles making a state visit to France and Germany, but there have been some complications.
There have indeed. So King Charles, we call him King Charles now, but his formal coronation is in May. And prior to that, he decided to do a state visit to France. His mother, the Queen, was very had very good relations with France, so he chose to have a state visit there before ahead of his coronation. But that was postponed on Friday, and that's because of these enormous pension reform protests right across France that we've been seeing in the last few weeks. They kind of came to a head on Thursday night when the city hall in Bordeaux was set on fire, and the French thought, hang on, is this the right moment with protests really right across the country and ongoing? Is this the right moment to be hosting a state visit from the British sovereign, which of course would require something like 4,000 to 5,000 French police to ensure King Charles' security? And those police, of course, could be perhaps better deployed looking after or dealing with these protests across the country. So that's been postponed. Mr. Macron is still trying to push the pension age up from 62 to 64. He enacted an executive order to get this through Parliament without a parliamentary vote, and that caused quite a lot of anger across the country and has fueled these protests. We should just say that Charles was on his way to France and then to Germany, but today Germany has a 24-hour transport strike that has brought the country to an almost complete standstill. So The omens are kind of against Charles going to France or Germany this week, but that was the visit that we were expecting to be covering.
Gracious. And just to sort of pick up on your mention of the strike in Germany, what's brought that about?
Well, this is living costs, the costs of food and energy. And the main trade union in Germany has said, we think the pay of our employees should go up by about 10%, and the government is balking at that. And so the union has basically called what is pretty much almost a general strike. Transport severely affected. I noticed in the last hour or so, you know, at the airport in Munich, for example, just closing down pretty much. And our correspondent in Berlin saying, no, the place really is at a standstill. I should say it's 24 hours, so it's not what we're seeing in France, which is kind of these rolling protests across the country and strikes and so on. But still, fairly unusual to see that in Germany, but that's what they are facing as of this morning.
Goodness. And after the 24 hours, what's expected to happen in Germany?
Well, then people go back to work again. If it's anything like this country, there will be a succession of strikes until there is some sort of negotiated settlement over pay. But we wait to see. We wait to see really what impact this one has on the government and whether it's prepared to renegotiate its position.
Watch this space. Now, this coming week, there's a legal case being heard by the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. It's been brought by a large group of elderly women from Switzerland. What's it all about?
Well, this is quite interesting. There is a large group of elderly women or older women in Switzerland. Be careful how I use the word elderly here, but the youngest age of this group is 64, and some of their members are in their 80s. There's certainly older women. Quite a large group. Now, they took, a year or two ago, they took their government to court, the Swiss government to court, saying, you signed the 2015 Paris Climate Accord on cutting emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, but you've not lived up to that, in our opinion. You've not done as much as you should have done, and as much as you were obliged to do under the terms of that accord. The Swiss government said, yes, we have. It went through the courts in Switzerland. The courts basically sided with the government and said there's not enough of a case here. against the government. And so what this group has decided to do is say, well, all right, we've been through the court system in Switzerland, including the Supreme Court. It's not come out in our favor. We're going to take this case to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg in France. And that is the case that we're going to see coming up later this week. And their main point is climate change is a human rights issue. Climate change affects people, makes people in the older age brackets particularly susceptible to the effects of climate change, like heat waves and so on. And therefore, we feel we have a human rights case here, and that the actions of our government go against the European Convention on Human Rights. And it's that convention that the court in Strasbourg is obliged to uphold. So it'll be very interesting to see where that case goes this week. And there's another one, by the way, a parallel one. So two cases in front of the court this week from a French mayor who is basically arguing the same thing. Is climate change a human rights issue?
And has the European Court on Human Rights heard other cases about climate change before these?
Not that I've seen. And in fact, when I was reading around this a bit, it was clear that that this is not normally a case that's brought to that particular court. So climate change, I mean, what it really says is climate activism is so rampant at the moment. And if you look at it was interesting looking at the Swiss was saying you should try and achieve your goals in a political way rather than a legal way. And this group has said, no, we can't do this. It's not working. We're going to follow a legal route. But it's interesting that I think there have been cases where people suing their governments across a number of European countries. But have we seen cases then cascading or escalating, if you like, to a supra court like this that covers Europe? Not that I know about.
And interesting that it's happening in Strasbourg with the backdrop of these sweeping protests, which I'm imagining are also in Strasbourg.
Yes, well, the protests, the pension protests are really across France. We are seeing almost every day we're seeing some protests in different parts of France. We're seeing these kind of quite strong comments from President Macron saying, this is something that's got to happen. We've got to change our pension rules. I mean, in this country, you know, the pension, the retirement age is, what, 67 or something? So, the French, in many ways, particularly here in Europe, are well behind in terms of where their retirement age is. It's 62 at the moment. He wants it to be 64. So it's an interesting issue. Actually, lots of French people actually agree that there should be pension reform. But they don't agree that Mr. Macron should push it through Parliament without a parliamentary vote. That seems to have particularly aggravated some people.
It has indeed. Well, Rob, thank you so much for this wrap, looking ahead at the week, and looking forward to catching up with you or one of your team in 7 days from now.
Indeed. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
Yes, you too.